You can have put up an agenda, slides, whatever. You're going to put up slides?
It's going to be a minute.
Okay. While all of our visual aids are getting put up, sorted out, why don't we begin by just going around. Can you not hear me, Martin? Start by going around the room and introducing ourselves, and then we'll talk, figure out who's on the telephone and get the apologies. So, Kim, I'm going to start with you since you're farthest away.
I'm Kim. Kim Davies, I can.
Martin Boyle from nominate.uk.
Catherine Reynolds from Sierra.ca.
Donnie Sparks de Blanc from .bi, U.S. Virgin Islands.
Stephen Derhek.as, American Samoa.
Eva Hatlisa.na, Namibia.
Desiree Milosevic with .gi, Gibraltar.
Gabriela Chatez, CCNSL Secretariat.
Christina Nordstrom, CCNSL Secretariat.
Cheryl Langdon, ILAC and the at-large community.
Becky Bird, CCNSO Council.
Bernie, resource.
Nigel Roberts, .gg and .ja, Guernsey and Jersey.
Daniel Kautiff, .bg.
For the purpose of this meeting, I'm nobody. I'm just an observer. My name is Vega from Zebe.
Oh, I'm Suleiman from Cote d'Ivoire in my same capacity.
Yeah, and then we have two people online.
Keith Davidson, .nz.
Patricia Boblete, nickchiller.cl.
And apologies from Bill Semik, Desiree Milosevic, and Suzanne Riddell.
I'm not sure. We can remove the Desiree.
I'm sorry, Desiree.
Imposter.
Okay. Sorry. And Jap Agar is just trying to dial in.
So, Keith, everybody wants to know if you're actually awake.
Absolutely awake and very, very happy as well. I'm not making a connection in the Adobe Connect room yet.
Okay.
Keith, they look very shaky about halfway through the second half.
Will you please put this all on the record?
Including your request. Okay. We're about to pull up the important documentation. For those of you on the phone, we're just having a moment of silence. In honor of New Zealand.
Or is it in commiseration for the French?
Okay.
Do we know who won?
Yes, 1 point New Zealand won with 1 point difference.
It won, that's the important part, right?
Christina and Gabby, we have several sets of minutes to approve. Is that right? We're just one from the last meeting?
Becky, there's two sets of meeting notes to confirm. One was a slightly amended meeting note from the 6th of October meeting, and the second was the draft of the 13th of October.
I'm sorry, we can't hear you, Keith.
I'll try again. There are two sets of meeting reports to confirm. One's from the 6th of October as amended, and the second is from the 13th of October, the draft.
Do we have any comments on the amended minutes from the 6th of October meeting? Hearing none, shall we approve them? Are you so moving? A second? Any opposed? The minutes of the 6th of October as amended are approved. The minutes from the 13th of October have been circulated. Any comments, questions? Hearing none, are they approved? Stephen? And okay, we just did it in reverse order. Any objections? All right, the minutes from the 13th of October are now approved. That's item number one on our list. Okay, for this next matter, which is the final approval review of the significantly interested parties document, which is in fact not going to be the final review of the significantly interested parties document given the absence of the GAC participants. So we will go over that at one more meeting on a call to give them an opportunity to put in any comments. But I'm going to turn this part of it over to Bernie, Mr. Resource.
Yes, here we are. Let's make sure we've got the stuff in red line. No, we don't in this version. All right. That's unfortunate. Okay. Let's get the speaker going. Can people online hear me?
Sure can.
Ah, excellent. Okay. I was scared there for a minute because it's quite loud here. That must be it. Okay. So we'll go through the red line version of SIP 2.1, I believe. Is that the correct version? Yes, that is the correct version. As per the modifications from our last meeting, there was a point from Bill Semich and L regarding applicable policy statements and the GAC, and now we've just turned it in Section 3 from applicable policy statements to applicable policy statements and GAC principles to separate them out so that we understand that the GAC principles are not policy statements, which was the requirement that was made. The next change was quoting the reference for understanding the CC delegation and redelegation procedure, where that came from. It used to be in the old documents. It vanished because we've been quoting it so much. So I've included in section 4.2 from the IANA website with the URL. So we know exactly where that's from. Is that okay for everyone in 4.2? I see head shaking, and I don't hear any major negative comments. Kim, I got the URL okay? Kim nods yes. Okay. Our next changes go to Section 7. 7.1.1, we had all sorts of problems with support for delegation or redelegation should be sought from significantly interested parties. We've removed that. Okay. We couldn't agree on it. 7.1.1 now is what was 7.1.2. It has not been changed. There are no red line changes there. Yes?
I think we haven't quite captured the point that I tried to make on the call. If you read RFC 1591 carefully, there is a distinction between interested parties and significantly interested parties. And I think what you kept in 7.1.1 is interested parties, not significantly interested parties. That's my opinion.
No, I understand. I think the thing we were proposing is that if we go through all the various terms of interested parties in RFC 1591, there's a variety of them. We're saying let's standardize on one of them. I'm not sure they were trying to make that much of a difference and focus on significantly interested parties for both delegation and redelegation.
In that case, I don't think random companies and individuals are significantly interested parties. I think they're merely interested parties. I think a significantly interested party is the territorial or national government. A significantly interested party is the existing CCTLD manager. Random companies or individuals are just merely interested.
Well, then we've got a point for discussion. So I guess what you're saying is we're okay with 7.1.1 as it is now for delegation, but you don't accept it for redelegation. Is that what I'm understanding? Because these are the same words that went through at our last meeting.
As I say, I think I have a problem with this because significantly interested parties is definitely more than interested parties. For delegation, it's worthwhile. It's as Ayana say, it's helpful to receive communications from interested parties. But significantly interested parties is a step above that. I think we need to define what a significantly interested party is. And I think everybody's going to agree that the government of a territory is a significantly interested party, a little bit more than just, for example, a library who may use the domain.
But this, the definition, of, as I understand it, says these things have to be taken into consideration. It does not assign equivalent weight to all of them. The government is automatically a significantly interested party, and then the definition here includes significant commercial interests or could be significantly affected. To me, this is like a materiality standard, but that doesn't mean that everybody is equal. I don't read these as suggesting that you're not allowed to take into account the fact that different participants in the process have different interests of more or less significance.
Again, just going back to RFC 1591, there is definitely an intention to distinguish between interested parties and significantly interested parties, and I think we need to capture that. That's just my point.
And you're, just so I make sure we understand it, and perhaps we, since we are not final, this is not final review, you and I can talk about it, but interested parties would be other people who have an interest sufficient to comment. But then are we going to eliminate the fact that some individuals could be significantly affected?
No, I think that's right. I mean, if you're a significantly interested party, you're also an interested party.
I don't think so. Do you want to take... I'm not sure. Could you give us an example of how you would, just for purposes of discussion, suggest what the distinction would be that we would put there?
Well, without trying to draft on the fly, a significantly interested party would be an existing or prospective CCTLD manager. It would be the government of the territory for which the two-letter code relates, and the national government, if there is one as well. As I said before, a library or somebody like that who is affected by it because they are using the domain, they're interested in the policy development of the CCTLD, is an interested party, not a significant. There's a higher standard. I think significant interest is who has a major interest.
I think we should work on a definition. For example, in the case of .ie, there is one registrar, Black Knight, that has 35% of the registrations. I think the commercial interest is so strong there that I would consider him a significantly interested party. But the thing is, we should define how, or we should write down how this should be defined.
Let me just take a crack at this, Nigel, again, not drafting on the fly. Parties who are not significantly interested but have enough interest to send in comments are interested parties. And I'm just trying to figure out whether you want to make some kind of quantitative or qualitative articulation of what significant is, because I don't see how that can happen.
I think I can certainly understand Nigel's point that the local library or somebody who owns half a dozen domain names is an interested party but not significantly interested, even though a change might actually have quite a serious impact on them. But I think if you look at note one, it starts, I think, trying to point us in the right direction, that what we're looking at is people who represent not just a single individual's point of view, but collectively, so that the Confederation of Country X Industry, the Small Business Chamber of Commerce for Country Y, might actually meet the criteria associated with significant interests, whereas library of town Y probably wouldn't. But I think the difficulty I see is getting us to a point where we're trying to define this right up front, and I'm actually wondering whether what is said in note one is actually sort of a fair and reasonable justification of what significantly interested is, because it talks about the groups rather than a single vested interest.
I think I completely agree with you, but Nigel doesn't. So, anybody else is an interested party?
Anybody have an interest in interest?
Speak in the microphone, otherwise it's not captured.
Okay. Should we try to draft something offline and float it for discussion in between?
Well, let's make sure we understand what we're talking about, because we've gone through this language twice and it's been okay. So we're starting to redraft stuff that people have not commented online or at meetings on. So let's just make sure we understand what the problem is and if there is a problem. 711 was trying to capture the essence of section 3.4 of RFC 1591, which says, significantly interested parties in the domain should agree that the designated manager is the appropriate party.
And what I'm trying to do is to draw this precisely enough that you can identify at the time of delegation who significantly interested parties are. Because if you take this definition, you'll never get anybody to agree that, because there are so many of them, you won't capture all of them. As I say, significantly interested party is an interested party who has a direct and significant interest. I mean, to some extent, this is self-referential because it says, if you read it, significantly interested parties are somebody who has a significant interest, and it doesn't really...
No, we understand, which is why we've been working on it. So your concern is more on the delegation side?
The definition should work for both.
Okay. I think from the work we've done so far, it seems to work for redelegation, but it might have an issue for delegation. Is that what you're saying? Or it doesn't work at all?
I don't think it works at all, because I think what you've defined here is interested parties. I think we need something else that says, this is what an interested party is, this is what a significantly interested party is. It's somebody with a significant and direct interest over and above.
So let me just try this. Adding to the governments and the operator are automatically significantly interested. Is there another some addition that you would like to put on that? I mean, I understand your concern to be if significantly interested parties have to agree, you have to know whether all of them are sitting at the table to agree.
Precisely. I'll give you an example. Supposing .gg applied for a redelegation. Significantly interested parties would be the government, all three governments with the bailiwick of Guernsey and the United Kingdom government. Martin's nodding.
But that's just a sort of slightly unusual case because of the agreements between United Kingdom and Jersey and Guernsey.
And territories around the world with all sorts of different relations. And it's not just on the government point of view. I would say that the local internet service providers are interested parties, but they're not significantly interested in the way that the government is.
I'm not so much keen on having to decide for 250-something CCTLD in each individual case what's what, but my point is I would like to have some predictability so that people know if something happens, this is where I would fall into, this is where somebody who is involved would fall into, or that there is some guideline to talk about.
Sorry.
In one way I can understand Nigel's point of view on delegation, but I have a question. I mean, the way you're shaping it, if you're saying significantly, to my mind, what I'm hearing from you is significantly interested is the government or governments that are involved.
I don't think that.
As well as the incumbent and proposed manager. I mean, am I understanding that properly? I'm just trying to get a grip because every time we talk, you're talking about significantly interested parties. You don't go beyond that. So I'm trying to figure out what that is.
Well, for example, let's say we have a new territory that comes out of the sea, and it's an independent country. let's say it has a government and it has some internet service providers. The internet service providers at this point will be, at the delegation point, are significantly interested, aren't they?
I'm trying to figure that out.
I think it's in every different organization, in every different situation, I don't think we can predict it. I think what Eberhard said is correct. We want to try and get a definition of what is the difference between significant and ordinary interest, because our SC 1591 in different parts of it makes a distinction.
So the notes in one say a significant interest, a commercial interest will be significantly affected if we used some word or set of words other than significantly in that. I mean, the other thing we could do is say significantly interested parties include at least A, B, C, and any other party that is meets the following six.
Yeah, an ordinary internet user is interested, but not significantly so.
Well, I think we're having trouble. I'm having trouble following you because I don't think that's what 711 says. I don't think it gives creates an ordinary internet user as a significantly interested party.
No, it doesn't.
Oh.
Maybe it's helpful to decide what sort of the input of it, the difference in input between an interested and a significantly interested party should be. Then it will fall into place easier.
So, as I understand it, the input, there is a difference, which is to say that significantly interested parties should agree, and the views of others, the interested parties, should be taken into consideration. Nigel, what I just suggested is a non-exhaustive list of parties who are automatically significantly interested, plus anybody else who meets the following criteria. Okay. And then in terms of the following criteria, is there an issue with the way it's set up in 7111?
Apart from the fact it's completely self-referential.
Well, yeah, but I agree. And I think that's the problem with the significant. I mean, we could introduce, rather than using significant, we could say materially, which is a term that has a legal concept. Okay. I think any other comments on that? So let's just to recap. Do you want, go ahead and ask a question.
Yeah, okay. Just by rereading this 7111, when you say there is an entity that is significantly interested to the respect of the CCCOD, this may be an entity that is, for example, significantly interested to abuse the CCCOD. I mean, this wording puts them in the significantly interested parties, so they should be consulted who should run the CCTOD or for delegation and things like that. I think we need some better wording here that explicitly says that those are significantly interested for the benefit of the CCTOD or for the benefit of the community that the CCTOD serves or anything like that.
Okay, that's a good addition, Martin.
Yeah, I fully agree with Daniel on that point. And I wondered whether the clarification could come in on something that was associated with representing the commercial or economic and social structure of the country. In other words, actually relating it to that very much wider community than, for example, the mention of ISPs. ISPs are interested parties. They have a vested interest, but they don't meet the second test of the wider country interest. And that's obviously stirred up.
Daniel will respond to that, then
I'll then. I had another thought also. We are listing, and I agree with Nigel that we need to remove this long list of all kinds of possible interested parties. but we all, for some reason, seem to think that the ISPs are significantly interested parties with regard to the CCTLD. And I think, unless this is proven in some way, that this is actually not true. I mean, they don't care about the particular CCTLD, and in some countries, or probably in most countries, the ISPs will happily work with any other TOD, no matter what. They are just commercially interested in their own services that may not touch domain names at all.
Right.
And also just one more thing. And also, when we talk about organizations, associations, and so on, there may be all kinds of big and heavy organizations in some countries that may claim to represent, let's say, the commercial interests within the country, but they, again, may not care at all about domain names, and their inclusion in this list may only serve the purpose of having some heavy weights put in the process.
That's it. We have an intervention from Bernie on that point.
Daniel, I don't see ISPs in here. One. Two, no, we don't mention ISPs. We don't focus on ISPs. We don't talk about ISPs. One. Two, when we're talking about local associations or user groups, et cetera, the wording is very clear that are able to demonstrate that they are significantly active with respect to the CCTLD. So it's not just someone that walks up and all of a sudden claims they're active. They have to demonstrate it. So I'm just trying to be fair here. I mean, you're really shoving it to one side. I think we're trying to put some mechanisms which allow these things to require demonstration.
Yes, but what kind of demonstration would you expect from, say, association of commercial companies or something like that, official letter that they have, say, 80% of the business in the country as their members or anything like that. That's
not
serious. I mean,
two things, okay? Once there's a requirement for demonstration. Two, you don't necessarily want to go into developing a full process because a committee like this will fail. What you're saying is giving an instruction that if we accept this, that there be a valid test for demonstrating these things. Okay, so those were my comments. Back to you.
Cal?
I heard the term vested interest. Martin, I think, said it. Vested interest, I learned recently, has a specific meaning. So we should be careful what we say here.
The other thing, this is more for our own guidance that we should bear this in mind. RFC 1591, which is the one I'm most familiar with, there are other documents that we're looking at. RFC 1591 was created in about 1994. It was created by a non-lawyer, but certain terms are being used. In 1996 or thereabouts, the government was not a significantly interested party. It probably wasn't even an interested party because before the big explosion of the World Wide Web, governments were not interested in this TCP/IP thing. They wanted X400 and the rest of it. And what's happened is, obviously and legitimately, the definition of significantly interested party has changed, not only to include governments, but to include without any argument and question that a government has an interest. And the same thing has happened in everything throughout this. So back in 1983, when .UK was delegated, I think you could actually enumerate for significantly interested parties. It was probably University College London and a couple of others. And what we've got to bear in mind is that we're creating something here that we want to go forward with, and it may mutate and change from here onwards, registrars, things like that.
So let me just try, I just want to try and capture where we are. This is not exact wording, it's not drafting, but just for a test. X, Y, and Z, governments plus some limited but spelled out list of automatically, you know, sort of automatically included, are automatically significantly impacted or significantly interested, as are other organizations or individuals that are, one, some sort of, you know, active participants with respect to the, well, I don't think we can say the management necessarily, but active participants with respect to this, and two, that can demonstrate that they are directly and materially affected by X, Y, and Z. And I understand Daniel's point about not wanting directly and materially affected to mean you have to take into consideration the people who want to abuse that, so we need to work that in there, although I think I think that would be sort of implicit in almost anything. But just in terms of that restatement, at a general level, do we have a sense of comfort that we're moving in the right direction? Okay. We will try to circulate something in the next couple of days, so we can maybe even talk about it generally on Thursday.
Yes.
Okay. So we will now leave our interesting discussion on 711 and move on to 712, which hasn't changed, but since we're revisiting everything dramatically today, the role of the relevant government or public authority in a delegation or redelegation should automatically be considered to be part of significantly interested parties unless it specifies otherwise.
Do we need this point? Because now we have a wording in 711 which says exactly that already.
The interesting difference here, the nuance that it brings, is unless it specifies otherwise. There are some governments which may not want to be for all sorts of reasons involved. And I was involved in drafting a whole bunch of language with that relative to IBM domains. There are countries where they specifically don't want to be. So we sort of need a specification somewhere. Maybe we can readjust 711, but there is a requirement somewhere to have an official out for governments if they want, I think.
Yes, but I see this, and I personally think that it will be probably better if we merge both points. But the issue is that the country's government is always significantly interested party. I mean, we cannot run away from this. And another point is that governments change. I mean, the people who run the governments change. So if the government at one time thinks they are not interested in this, maybe the next government will be. So I don't think it's appropriate to have suspended.
Let's be clear, this is
Martin, then Nigel.
The fact that the government turns around and says that it has no objection or that it is happy for things to go ahead doesn't stop it from being a significantly interested party. It is automatically a significantly interested party, and therefore the wording in 7121, it can't just sort of turn around and renounce its significant interest. All it can do is say, we are happy to see the market take or whatever
but it has actually got to have said, yeah, we're happy, or whatever, in that process. It can't just renounce it.
Okay, we're drilling down a little bit to the nuts and bolts, actually. I want to take issue's not quite the right word, with the phrase relevant government or public authority. It's a term of art we've imported almost by osmosis from the GAC, and my problem with it is it's actually imprecise. It's what is relevant? I gave an example of our own particular situation, and I think what we're trying to express in this clause alone is that the government or public authority with responsibility for the area covered by the two-letter code. I think we need to say so, because relevant government or public authority, as we've learned in the discussion with Dot Berlin and a few others, could be the local town council. And I think what we're trying to say here is it's the government or public authority for the two-letter code. It doesn't stop the UK government being a significantly interested party under the other clause, but the intent of this clause is that automatically the government for the two-letter code is a significant interested party.
It's not a government for a two-letter.
I know that's shorthand. So
yeah, well, this is shorthand and you're objecting to it, so if we're going to clarify it, we should probably clarify it so that we don't have to deal with it again. So it's the relevant... is the government or public authority for the country or territory representing the two-letter ISO 3166 code.
Correct.
Okay, so we're all okay with that? That's very precise and unarguable, so we'll work on that.
Okay, one point here. We always talk about the two-letter code, and we forget that already we have this idea and CCTODs, so we should use some language that doesn't actually exclude those, because in some situation we may end up with country or territory or whatever that has an IDN CCTOD but doesn't have an ASCII CCTOD.
No, that's a good point, but even if it doesn't have an ISO 3166 CCTLD, the ISO code still works, and it's still allocated. That's the basis for the definition. So I understand your point, though, and I think we can expand it just to make sure we don't exclude IDN CCTLD.
Other comments on this point? All right, back to you. Martin has a question, followed by Nigel.
I'm just wondering in what way IANA can do a public consultation in a sovereign state. I don't think particularly it's got the authority to do that. And it would seem to me to be taking the responsibility of the local community to do that analysis itself. So could you elaborate a bit on what this is actually trying to get over to us?
The current requirement, if you read the IANA procedures on delegation and redelegation, is that the applicant for a delegation or a redelegation provide IANA with the input. Now, it's not the government providing the input, it's the applicant. And I think one of the considerations we were looking at is that can be biased. Obviously, there's a conflict of interest if you're trying to get a CCTLD and you're putting in an application and you're providing, you're the only source for providing information of support. You know, that seems fairly clear that there's an issue there.
The other question I have is nothing would stop the government or the applicant or anybody else from showing that this request has the support, but how do you give other significantly interested parties who might not have been consulted the opportunity to communicate the fact that they are significantly interested and have a view?
It's just I think it's putting a particular onus on IANA to go out and run that public consultation. I think that's what's giving me a bit of a sort of question mark as to how it should go and do that. Surely the IANA role would be to go back to the applicants, the putative registry, and say, well, you know, you haven't documented your local government, or you haven't shown us how you've got to indicate this level of support. So in other words, what you're looking for is that the applicant has properly documented what it sees as being that level of support from the significantly interested parties. And say, it just seems to me that if I were IANA and then being expected to do a public consultation in country X, I'd scratch my head and think, well, how would you go about doing that?
So why wouldn't IANA put up posts? We have a request for X, Y, and Z. Where, you know, any significantly interested party who has a view on this is now free to communicate with us.
So where would it publish this?
On the IANA site.
In many countries, how would the organizations actually know that IANA had got this sudden interest and were publishing it?
Well, how would they know it otherwise? I mean, because they're going to know it all the ways they would otherwise, and then there's a public consultation.
But I think the point I'm making is I would expect the organization that was putting in the proposal for the change was able to document that it had been going out and talking to its local community in one way or another.
And nothing would preclude that, right? Nothing at all would preclude that. And if I was an applicant, I would certainly put that in. But the applicant also has an interest in communicating with its definition of significantly interested parties, which may or may not be all of them. Elle, you had your hand up, and then Nigel.
Just a comment on the comment up there is, if the applicant is expected to go out there and drum up support, why couldn't the applicant be expected to go out there and ask people to comment on the public consultation? If it's part of the requirement.
I have three things. First of all, I agree with Martin's point. And the second point I want to make is that I think the entire paragraph is out with the terms of reference of this working group. The working group is an interpretation working group to interpret existing policy. This is clearly setting out a policy for the how the IANA should do its job in future, and I'm very uncomfortable seeing that in a document that's interpreting policy. And thirdly, the requirement for demonstrating that the significantly interested parties agree is at delegation time, not re-delegation time.
And then we discussed on the list, I don't really want to go into much detail, but we discussed on the list there is countries and governments. and they change, and some are more democratic or legitimate than others, and don't want to go into too many examples, but I don't really think we need, besides that we shouldn't set policy, we don't need to really start figuring out what's a properly conducted survey, what's now then we need election monitoring, and it goes to no end. I don't have an answer, but I think to say IANA must go and decide for each country how to conduct a survey or so, don't really fly.
So I understand that, and I didn't understand this to be getting at that, but let me just push back on one thing you said. Right now, IANA has to apply the policy that significantly interested parties should agree, right? That's the policy. How does it do that?
Delegation time.
How does it do that? That's what I think this is.
My point is that the burden of proof is on the applicant.
Don't say that in the policy.
Okay, I understand.
Well, that's the point. Okay, but it doesn't say it's on the applicant. You're making that.
On your mic, Mike.
If I make an application and the terms of the application say this should happen, it's up to me to show it.
That's correct, but you may have an interest in showing it in a particular way by excluding information from a significantly interested party. So how does that party have an opportunity?
I propose we interpret it as such, since we are a framework of interpretation working group.
We interpret it as what such?
Whatever we decide.
Okay, I'm up for that.
And I think that's the point we're trying to make. It's not policy. There is a requirement for proof. I think...
Demonstration, not proof.
Yeah, the demonstration. This group has to come to some consensus. Is the current version of that definition adequate, or do we want to interpret into a new one? But I don't think it's new policy. I disagree with that.
I'm quite happy with if this group were, for example, to decide to recommend that the burden of proof lies with the applicant, and we interpret RFC 1591 to read as or the policy document to be interpreted as such. Whether this is now the outcome of this discussion is a different thing, but I would be happy if we decide this is how we interpret it. For example, burden of proof lies with the applicant.
I think we're going to have to work on this one a little bit. Okay.
Sorry, 714 is a change suggested by Bill at the last call, evaluation of citizen input for delegation or redelegation request, pending the other changes we've got above, should take into considerations input from the relevant government or public authority and the results of the public consultation. But as we say, that's pending wherever we end up with the other stuff. And that's the remainder.
I think Martin.
Could we actually identify the result of any public consultation rather than the public consultation, which implies that a public consultation has taken place and that is not necessarily the case depending on the country concerned?
Well, I think we've agreed to look at the notion of public consultation anyways, so that's why I put the caveat in. Over to you.
Okay, we will circulate, we will put our heads together, discuss in the hallways and circulate some additional language, revised language on this for the Thursday meeting. Okay, now are we moving to the presentation?
Yeah.
He's chiming.
All right. This is just a quick review of the PowerPoint presentation that updates that will be presented through the CCNSO and the GAC and anywhere else we're asked to update where we are with this working group. It's essentially based on the progress report, which was approved by the group, so there should be no surprises. And we'll just run through it to make sure that that's the case. Presentation outline, scope of framework of interpretation, the process, topics for interpretation, activities in Singapore, revised charter, terminology, valid manager, ACMTC, consent, significantly interested parties, meeting of the working group in Dakar. I'm not going to stop because this is background stuff and all basic. The scope of the framework, applicable policy and guidelines, RC 1591 and GAC principles, framework for interpretation, adding color and depth to existing policy and guidelines, not in scope, changing applicable policy or guidelines, the IANA functions contract. This is all the basic definitions of the FOI working group. Process for topics. Working group prepares a draft set of interpretation for a topic in an interim report. In example, the consent report we've got out currently. The working group undertakes a public consultation of the draft set of interpretation. The working group reviews comments and input. The working group prepares a final report of interpretation for a topic. GAC and CCNSO support for a final report. Both communities have to support the report. Submission of report to the board by the chair of the CCNSO includes confirmation of support by GAC and CCNSO, a report with recommendations. So basically, this is the full cycle for recommendations on one topic going all the way to the ICANN board once it's been through a public consultation, adjusted, published, and approved by the CCNSO Council and the GAC. Okay. Topics for interpretation that were published was consent for delegation and redelegation requests, support for delegation and redelegations from significantly interested parties, recommendations for unconsented redelegations, a comprehensive glossary, and recommendation for IANA reports on delegations and redelegations. This is the updated one after we moved the glossary to the back and dropped valid ACTC. Activities in Singapore. The working group met by teleconference 9 times since the Singapore meeting, has updated its charter and work plan, has published a progress report on its activities in Singapore, has published a public consultation on consent, is currently working on the topic of significantly interested parties. The revised charter. The charter of the working group was updated to confirm the full participation of the GAC in the working group. Website is given. Terminology topic. The objective is to develop a comprehensive glossary of terms used in context of delegation and redelegations of CCTLDs. The working group concluded that it would be more effective to evolve glossary in parallel with other work. Terminology topic has been moved to the end of the schedule, which is what we decided when we dealt with this topic. Consent. The objective was to develop guidelines as to how IANA should obtain and document consent from the proposed manager for a CCTLD delegation and from the proposed and incumbent managers for a redelegation. The working group completed its initial work on the consent topic in September, and results are included in an interim report, which is currently the subject of a public consultation. URL attached. Consent 2. Input and comments on interim report are taken into consideration by the participants in the working group. Based on input and comments, the working group will prepare a final report. The final report on consent will be published prior to the Costa Rica meeting. That's the March timeframe. At the Costa Rica meeting, seek support from the GAC and CCNSO on recommendations and obtaining and documenting consent. We all okay with this? Okay. Valid manager AC and TC topic. No need for this topic. the FOI has proposed that only the manager approve the delegation and that only the incumbent and proposed managers approve a redelegation. No change in project plan by removing this.
Nice.
It's just a wording. It's the we have proposed this. I think it's more that we've interpreted it to mean or to suggest that or something like that. I don't know how you phrase that. It's not new.
We can adjust. Significantly interested parties. The objective is to develop guidelines as to how IANA should obtain and document support for delegations and redelegations from significantly interested parties as defined in RFC 1591. It is expected that working group will complete its initial work on this topic and publish an interim paper prior to the Costa Rica meeting. Some wording adjustment there. We'll get that done. The CAR meeting, there's the Thursday, October 27th meeting, 1 till 4 in the Saint Aubert, which is downstairs where the GAC is meeting currently, I believe. Yes, so we'll have the GAC room. Always open to observers. The agenda is review update to terminology. We're trying to work on that, but that may slide a bit if we're going to do some major rewrites on the SIP paper. Review documents from the last meeting. We've done most of that today, but we'll confirm that with our GAC colleagues. Review input from the consent public consultation, significantly interested parties, and the schedule of meetings that will take us until Costa Rica. URLs and email addresses, FOI working group website, consent public consultation, working group chair, email address, support me email address, and the presentation. Is that okay for everyone with minor wording input and the correction? Martin has his pencil up.
Yes, Martin.
Correction, it's a pen.
Sorry, I don't have my glasses.
Sorry about that. It occurred to me when I was reading the consents paper that in preparation for this meeting that there is likely to be a gap, and the gap is going to come where you have I can't remember what term we used, was it a defective manager?
Are you saying GAC or GAP?
GAP. Oh, what? A derelict manager, i.e. somebody who can't respond. And that then either becomes a contested, but of course it's not contested because there's nobody to do the contestation, and it isn't a consent because there's nobody there to do a consent. So I was wondering where in our schedule that was going to figure.
Isn't dereliction significant misbehavior? Definition of significant misbehavior?
You don't want to go there now.
If the organization has disappeared in a puff of smoke for whatever reason, you have no way of changing the manager of that entity. Somebody might have taken it on, but you haven't got the original manager, the manager who is mentioned in the IANA report, to come up and say, yeah, I consent to the redelegation.
You're raising a very good point, which was discussed internally with the exec quite a lot. But the point is 3.6 in RFC 1591 is for a consented transfer. That's the only thing it covers. So, yes, there's a gap, and we're going to have to address that in unconsented redels is the simple answer.
Right, I think this goes back. We will come back to discussing this, but there is, you can move something around if there's significant misbehavior on the part of the existing manager, and not operating it would be
I don't think necessarily it would be misbehavior, but really my question was, where are we going to deal with that particular case? I think I've got the answer.
Other comments? I think that's the end of our... Any comments from people on the phone?
If anybody's still on.
I think Patricio and Keith are on the phone.
Yep.
Okay. I think we are done. Thank you very much. See you on Thursday.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye.